is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio 96.9, and this is The Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, Bahamian surgical oncologist, cancer surgeon, Dr. Wesley Francis. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Francis.
Good evening, Bahamas. Thank you, Greg, for allowing me to co-host with you again. I missed a couple of shows, but I'm back. And looking forward to having a great show tonight and educating the Bahamian public.
And we're both very encouraged, astonished at times to even fathom the number of persons who actually listen to the show and find the show engaging and encourage us to continue to try to promote preventative medicine, a holistic approach, the body as a whole, not just the physical but also the mental. And we're going to try to talk to as many of our colleagues throughout the year and the years to come and try to, knowledge is key. So essentially we're trying to save lives. We're trying to improve the quality of lives of men, women, and children and as a nation as a whole. We're a very unhealthy nation, and that's not just physical, but that's emotionally, psychologically, physically. Crime is an overwhelming problem. Stress is an overwhelming problem with the high cost of living. So it manifests in many ways, and it also manifests in the physical and emotionals. And particularly, we have a generation of lost men, and we're hopefully not going to lose another generation as time goes on. So this is November, where we're celebrating Movember, where annually throughout the world, men are encouraged to grow a mustache, not to shave, to try to emphasize awareness for many health issues for men, and particularly prostate cancer, testicular cancer, and mental health and mental well-being. I'll put the ball in Dr. Francis's court. Right now, we have a generation of lost young men. They're emotionally drained. They're almost like a ticking time bomb. There's so many men that are just one traumatic event away from being pushed over the edge. What can we do to try to save the next generation or this generation now?
Hey, Greg, I think that it's a multifaceted. It's a problem that will require multifaceted solutions. And it's going to take us men to be accountable, to recognize that the responsibility is ours, to be examples to younger men. Mentorship is important. I think that young men emulate the behaviors that they see within their home, within their community. And we, or older men, who would have gone through, and some of us, we went through all those issues also, and now have greater experience and understand emotional intelligence, we have to try to impart that on younger men. Simple things like conflict resolution. I think a lot of people don't appreciate that, you know, if we can't resolve simple conflicts, they tend to escalate. And I think the in addition to us, older men being accountable, we have to learn to, how we teach younger men to be, to de-escalate. I think that's the word that we got to try and bring out so that people would appreciate that, to de-escalate, because we always escalate. We always running hot and going up there. But it's time to that we ought to teach younger men how to de-escalate, because the consequences of the actions just lead to nothing that's good. And so we have to be a positive influence on younger men, I think, and it's part of the problem. And that's where we start. You
I
know?
Think there are fewer and fewer positive images out there. I think the media has a role as well. We're emphasizing too much in the way of negative, and we don't bring to light anything positive. I mean, we ourselves know colleagues of ours, young men, men in our set who accomplish great things. And I think a lot of younger men would be inspired to know the things that are accomplished, whether it's innovative surgeries.
But we got to be deliberate.
Yes, we need to be deliberate.
I think we got to be very deliberate about it. I, you know, we were very, our society was very deliberate about getting women or empowering women, educating women, ensuring that they were represented, ensuring that they were, you know, that there was no discrimination. I think we now, the pendulum has swung to where we need to start being very deliberate about men, young men, and making sure that they're are present, make sure that they're represented, that we now invest in them. Because now, I mean, you can see the classes, right? You can see the professionals. There are very few men represented at that level. So we have to be deliberate about bringing them up now. It's almost going to be an affirmative action for men. I think that that is something that our society has to recognize. It. We as individuals first, we have to be accountable and then be deliberate about it. And I think society... government has a role also, and non-government organizations have a role that we need to invest in young men.
And then you talk about discrimination. I think there's some level of discrimination in terms of the mentality in our society, the culture that's ingrained, where young men are discouraged from doing well academically. They're discouraged from beating the books. They're discouraged from accomplishing great things, and it's a very... women-driven educational system. Most of the teachers are women. Most of the principals are women. Most of the guidance counselors are women. So there's a lack of role models there. But even within schools, I think, even if it's not done directly, but even indirectly or subconsciously, I think women are promoted and encouraged to do well, and men are not, even within pairs. If you do well, you're gonna catch hell from your friends. You're going to catch... hell from your colleagues. And why is that? And it's the stupidest thing on earth.
Yeah, it is. You know, I don't want to, you know, put men against women or such as that. I mean, I think women who are deserving, if they work hard, they should be elevated and they should get it. I think we're at the point where we have to just recognize that the young men are being left behind. And leaving the, and if they're being left behind, you're creating a generation of men who would be disaffected, who have who don't have the skills to even if opportunities were available, to capitalize on those opportunities. And so that becomes a problem. And when you have disaffected men who are not empowered, who don't have any opportunities, then this is where they lead to a life of crime. And then, because you can see the numbers incarcerated, yeah, we have a lot of men incarcerated. We have a lot of men undereducated. And so I think we just have to be deliberate about what we do with young men. Women will continue to succeed, and I'm proud to know that they will. It's not a man versus a woman thing. We just have to now invest in young men. And even if they're only women role models that we have, They also have a responsibility to raise these young men and empower them also, so that they would succeed. You know, and I think it's going to be all around. So it's a big problem. It's going to require significant solutions on every aspect of society, including women.
And I think we have to emphasize, and we both feel this way strongly, that we're not trying to say that success in life means academic success or professional success. There's so many ways that we can be positive members of society, that we can succeed, that we can be wonderful role models. And that doesn't necessarily mean academically. I mean, there are some carpenters who are master carpenters, and I'm in even awe of the work they do, and they do very, very well. They may have 25 people working for them at any one time, and they're to get them to do any job, you're booked out 6-9 months at a time. There are some master plumbers that have the greatest respect from us. So there's so many ways that we can do, whether it's blue collar or white collar. There's a role for all of us in the society, and we need excellence in every aspect, in every profession. So, yeah, it's wonderful to have the top lawyers. It's wonderful to have the most accomplished surgeons. But if we don't have the if we don't have the master builders who are honest, if we don't have the carpenters, if we don't have the masons, there's so many things that require. I mean, there's some landscape persons who we almost call landscape artists, and they do very, very well. So there's a role for all of us, and we just need to find our niche. But we're not going to find that, and young men are not going to find that if they go down the road of gangs, if they go down the road of delinquency, of creating trouble, marijuana, drinking to excess, vagrancy, everything else that's negative. You'll never get above that. And your life can go one direction or the next, and that can start at the age of 8 or 10 or 12.
I mean, I think we need to have a diverse economy, and having a diverse economy requires diverse people or diverse skill sets. And like you say, I mean, you always need a good plumber, you always need a good electrician. You need people who are technically sound. You need good generator people. You know, there's so many services out there, and the economy is driven by people who provide services and who sell products. And there's so many services required in our community. And as long as people who, just as we try to be the top in our profession, if you just provide the best service that you can get, that you can to people who are in demand for those services, you will always do well. And that's just like, we are actually in a service industry, Greg. If you think about it, we just try to provide the best service that we can. Just like that electrician, if he provides the best services on time, reasonable budget, you will see the work will always come. And so the economy just has to be diverse that way. And so we have to be deliberate in encouraging all of those. Everybody doesn't receive education the same way. And I think we have to recognize that too. Investment in our education is going to be very important. And you know about, we talk about social determinants of health. Education is probably one of the most key factors in getting a healthy population.
And there's so many ways that people can be talented. They may be creative. They may have ingenuity in terms of starting a business. So it doesn't always have to be academics. But what you want to be is a positive role model for even your younger siblings.
Absolutely.
You want to be a positive contributing member to society. So you don't want to create chaos. You don't want to create destruction. You don't want to create shame and despair for your mother, for your grandmother, for your father, for your uncle. Try and do positive things in life, and positive things will happen to you. But if you're going to go down a wayward road and you're going to get into petty crime is going to mushroom into armed robbery is going to mushroom into murder, and your life is over before you know it. There's so many men, in particular in the society, who wish they could take that one moment back, and they just can't. They, in a moment of anger, they reacted a certain way, and they just can't undo that, what they did. And many of them will just never have the same life, or if they do ever pick up the pieces, it'll only be a semblance of the greatness they could have achieved if they never went down that road. So we need to speak to these young men, and I don't think there's an age in terms of, oh, we're only going to try to save the 15-year-olds, the 16-year-olds. Let's start from 4 years old and 5 years old. We're going to garner respect for your elders when you're going to have a belief in God and spirituality and goodness and contributing to society and not throwing litter on the side of the road and being an environmentalist and wanting better for the Bahamas and to improve the Bahamas. And for so many young men, they feel that there is no future. And if there is a future, they want to get out. They want to go to the United States. They want to go to Canada. They want to improve themselves, but they don't want to come back and improve our society. We spoke about brain drain. That's a reality. You know, and I know so many people or would have had such a wonderful contribution to society in so many different careers and so many different professions. Even with our own families, we have people who could have made a great impact in our country, and whether it's because of crime is the number one thing, I think. They don't want to come back. Why are we going to deal with the crime? Why are we going to deal with the high cost of living? It's almost become unbearable.
But again, Greg, I think it's about the diversity. We have to diversify our economies. We have to be able to create programs that will allow people to get into industries and service lines that are going to be profitable for them, profitable for the community, and then society as a whole. And it has to be diverse. We got to create opportunities for those. The reason why we have brain drain is really a lot of people, they find opportunities elsewhere. When they finish, they can't come home because the opportunities are not there or not realized. And we're largely a tourist, buying gain. I mean, healthcare is now becoming a significant employer, but tourists, banking, agriculture, we really need a tech industry. We need allied health. Listen, there's so much allied health jobs that are available, but you don't have people who are sufficiently educated or have the skill set to perform those. Every time you see, because I've been seeing a lot of different healthcare institutions opening, in healthcare clinics. Each one of those healthcare clinics needs skilled workers in healthcare. And so you could look at healthcare as an industry that is mushrooming, but it needs the human resource aspect of that. And you need skilled technicians, laboratory personnel. All of these are jobs that are available in an economy like ours when it becomes more diverse. And I think we need to encourage all of these things.
Well, this is meant to be an interactive show, so let me not be remiss in giving out the telephone numbers. You can call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259, or you can call toll-free from the Family Islands at 242-300-5720. So you are a shining example of someone who's overcome hardship. You would openly say there were times you didn't know where your next meal was coming from. You couldn't afford textbooks. There was a lot of hardship, I'm sure, even getting school uniforms, but you were able to persevere. And I think you, and there are several like you, should motivate persons in similar circumstances to achieve great things. Because if you can do it, anybody can do it.
Well, yeah, Greg. I mean, I'm an inner city kid, right? I grew up, again, I think we talked about this before on the show, and I want to encourage all the guys out there. I mean, it was just, for me, I just loved education. I loved learning. I still love learning. I still do a whole lot of stuff. I learn something new every day. I try to. And so that's something that you have to, it's a passion of mine to continue to learn. And education takes you places. Learning takes you places. I would say that everywhere I've gone in the world and the exposure that I've gotten, given the fact of where I came from, solely 100% due to the fact that I was educated. And I always say this, I was educated in the public school system. So why I went to Ridgeland Park, SE McPherson, and Government High. And not the Government High, but the Government High there in Yellow Elder. I have to distinguish that because my older colleagues would say that the Government High. I never went to the Government High. I went to Government High in Yellow Elder. All right? But I had teachers that cared about me and who were passionate about recognizing that I wanted to learn and gave more and more opportunities. But I would say, too, though, even in my environment, there were people in my environment who encouraged me. Okay? There were role models in my environment who encouraged me. There were good role models, there were bad role models. But then the choice was mine to go and follow those good role models. And I think that's what life is about. You have to choose. You have to choose a path. And I think we have to, again, encourage and be deliberate about kids who are in the inner city to let them know that there's a path out there. Okay?
I mean, for young men who were in your situation that you were in as a young man, who might be experiencing bullying because they're doing well academically, who don't see a hope. They can't even fathom the dream of what you've gone through. What has education given for you? What have you seen? What have you experienced? I mean, you've seen the world.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I've seen the world because I pursued education. Education allowed me to see the world. I left the Bahamas for the first time when I went to Jamaica. I never traveled before that. I went to Jamaica to medical school. And then being in medical school, again, that education then led me elsewhere. I went to America. I trained in Detroit. Again, that's his pursuit of education, pursuit of a profession. From there, I went to Canada. While I was in Detroit, again, pursuit of education, pursuit of professions, of my profession, I saw Europe. I saw South America, all of those places I went, not on vacation, but in pursuit of education, in pursuit of the profession that I am now in. And a lot of that was sponsored because, you know, it's because you try to do the best and be the best, and people recognize when you're good. I was always a competitive person. I always wanted to be the best. And when you try to be the best and you strive for that, people recognize that and it's rewarded.
And obviously, as a surgeon, you go around the world, you're respected. Absolutely. Just because of your achievements, because of what you contribute to mankind and society, that you have life-saving skills, that you have knowledge that very few people do, that if you can take pressure that as a surgeon, life or death is something that you always see. I mean, life is on the razor's edge. If you scalpel in one direction, the next can be traumatic. So you always have to have your wits about you, and there you have to have inner strength. And it's not just about academics. It's about you essentially have to have true grit. You have to go through the toughest of times and come out ahead.
And it's about resilience too, right? I mean, because, hey, it wasn't always rosy.
No.
Yeah. We both had a lot of tough times. Listen, we still have tough times nowadays, and you got to be resilient because people depend on you. And I would say to any kid out there, listen, sometimes your family depend on you. Excel and find the opportunities. And finding the opportunities is really sometimes all it amounts to is you paying attention to what it is put before you.
I mean, I've spoken about the lack of positivity in our society in terms of lauding accomplishments. You were the first Bahamian surgical oncologist. I never saw any big fanfare or anything in the media. We have a friend who was the first pediatric surgeon, and there's so many different firsts. We've brought so many different advanced surgical techniques and minimally invasive procedures that occasionally we will bring light to because we want our populace to have confidence and know that we have every element of modern advancement that you can get anywhere in the world. But why is it that the murderers, the rapists, are always on the front page?
Yeah, I guess we'll talk more about that on the other side of the break.
Okay, so welcome back at the other end of the break, and we'll continue this conversation further.
Always on the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Get ready, Nassau. Bahamas Liquidation and Auction Center is back with our annual 3 days of blackout. Mark your calendars for November 28th, 29th, and 30th. It's 3 days of unbelievable deals right here at home. We're bringing you thousands of items from Amazon, Home Depot, and Walmart. Everything at their online listed prices, freight and duty paid. Don't believe us? Bring your phone and Google it. Experience the U.S. prices right here in Nassau. Call us at 698-0123 or WhatsApp 557-2522. Meet us on Mackey Street. Don't miss out. See you there for 3 days of total blackout deals.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is the Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and Bahamian surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis. We're trying to basically encourage a lost generation of young men to do better for themselves. We have a call coming in. Good night.
Hello.
Good night. Welcome to the Urologist Speaks.
Hello.
Yes, hello. I hear you.
Good evening, Dr. Pinto.
It's a pleasant good evening to you, sir.
Well, I don't know if you might have heard this voice before.
I have, yes.
Yeah, it's been around town and been in the garbage box and all over the place. But anyway, nice to meet you, sir. I listened to you from you started opening your mouth. And you know, I have questions about man and God himself.
Yes.
Growing up one time, we were hearing with the God. Now, as we watch internet, as we watch technology, man seems to be trying to become God. When we look, we see man making robots that tell us this robot could do everything that a human being could do. It even looks like a human being.
Yes, yes, sir.
But underneath the plastics and whatever it is, there are a bunch of steel bars and joints and mechanical instruments and everything. And I'm telling you, the female robot could please a man today without having a real female.
Yes, yes. So can I ask one thing for you? What is your, how do you think we can save this present lost generation of Bahamian men?
I'm trying to get to that.
Okay.
But sometimes when I try to get to that, they realize that for you to do a show, You need 2 hours to do one show.
I agree, yes.
For me to call in, I don't have 2 hours to say what I have on my mind.
Okay.
I have a few minutes.
Okay.
If you want to get to the next caller.
No. We'll give you your time. Your opinion is important. Your opinion is important.
But I listen to you about healing a man and this and do this and do that. Eat the right food, do the exercise. And a man could become a young man again. I'm 73. You could tell me you can make me 18 again if I do this, if I do that, and so forth. But we realize that man cannot make man.
Yes, sir.
And the body's muscles after a certain time, knowing the biology that they told me in the legum, and I eventually, the muscles themselves and the cells start to break down, that we are not here forever.
I understand that, yes.
We're not here forever. And I tried to fuss that in England. I tried to call your office. No disrespect. I understand you went off to school. Your parents spent all kind of money, get you out to school to become who you are. And you need to make that money back so you can live on and your children could go to the universities and stuff like that. But sometimes the cost of living now, for what you tell us you can do for me, when I make a call to your office, the woman say $800 to see him. I say, but miss, I'm a senior citizen. I don't have $800.
We had that conversation before, sir, and never in the history of the Bahamas has any physician, surgeon, or otherwise ever charge anybody $800. So you must misheard. Maybe $80, but certainly not $800. Only in our dreams. There's a fee schedule, sir. We can't willy-nilly charge anything. That there's a mandatory fee schedule depending on the degree of severity or complexity of a case. We can only charge by how many minutes we invest in seeing that patient, whether they're first-time patient or follow-up patient. So no, there's absolutely no truth to that, and you misheard. There was some miscommunication, so I can't emphasize that any more than I am.
But what I'm saying, Doc, is men are afraid to go to the doctor.
And do you remember I told you that please come and see me and I'll see you for free? You forgot that.
I'm not talking about me. I'm
okay, all right.
What I'm trying to say, Doc, man, because if I might tolerate me, I go in the doctor.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're different than most
of
the human.
I'm not afraid to go to the doctor. My fingernail, Doc, what happened to my fingernails? I've gone from the toe doctor to the ankle doctor, straight up to Dr. David Allen, right to the brain doctor, because I believe they were trained to take care of people. But a lot of Bahamian men, when you talk about we losing them, they're afraid to go to doctors.
Yes. Well, I'm also talking about not just the physical ailments that plague our young men, but also the mental, the psychological, and the emotional, the anger, the turmoil, the death, the depression, the devastation that they live with. And it's unsustainable.
The doctor is really scaring me now in my country, where I am afraid to go out of my house sometime even in the day.
It's a sad reality for many of us, yes.
I know most of us are afraid to take your wives and your girlfriends and your children out to a restaurant at night, because you know which sick fellas are just walking there looking for somebody. And you happen to be in that area, and then gunshots could go off. And we have nobody seem to protect us, because when the police reach to the scene, the yellow tape is already there, and you and I will be on the ground in a puddle of bulk blood.
A sad reality, yes.
We have our own homes in this little country.
Well, we all have to take responsibility for it, you know. I mean, this is our community and this is our homes. If we are afraid to go out, I think the whole community needs to be in an uproar. We can't live that way, right? You want to live that way? I don't want to live that way. So I think we now, as a community, have to seek steps in which we now try to curb that behavior.
But what do? We march on Bay Street, we beg the government, we beg the police department, we beg everybody. Then all of a sudden around the country, we had a police them corrupt. Latest thing coming out in this country is they got police in America on corruption charges and so forth. So the people that we pay to protect us
are
corrupt, are selling drugs, are selling guns. We wonder where the guns coming into the country. Now we find out the police are bringing the drugs in. The police are bringing the guns in. And then we find out who's shooting the guns. Well, they're selling the guns to the young boys.
Well,
the young boys come into your house and kill young women, young girls, and you and me. We can't even go out in the day or night, just a restaurant having a dinner.
I hear what you're saying, and I understand your frustrations, and many of us in our nation are disappointed by this national news. But I must, as a physician, as a surgeon, urologist, who for many years routinely sees police officers, defense force officers, who are on the front lines, that put their life and limb in peril to try and save us for very little compensation, I herald many of them, and I have them in the highest esteems. Obviously, every profession has bad apples, but I know so many wonderful police officers who care, and have saved many lives and have encouraged many in the community to change their life and turn their life around. So, yes.
Dr. Pinto, before I go, we have developed in this country, and you know it and I know it, we have religious leaders that are corrupt. We have politicians that are corrupt. We have social leaders, permanent secretaries, whatever, in this country corrupt. And the Bahamian people don't know who to talk to, because if you open your mouth and you say anything, you get victimized.
Well, we need to try and change that society and change that mindset. But there's a lot of good. Let's talk about the positivity. There's a lot of wonderful police officers. There's a lot of wonderful Defense Force officers. There are a lot of wonderful teachers who are doing wonderful things. So we can't just, with a broad stroke of a pen, say that everybody is no good and everybody is no bad, is not going anywhere, and our society's going down the drain. Obviously, we want to weed out the bad apples, but let's also stress the positive. Obviously, we're always talking about the negative, but there's very little to speak about the positive. And as a society, we're all going to become depressed because of it. There's so many wonderful things nobody knows about, or very few persons know about. If we can speak about more positive things, and we can bring light to wonderful things going on in our society that happen every single day, I think we'll be a better society. We can, obviously, we can't put a blanket over the negative, but we can also highlight the positive. But I thank you very much for your call. We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Okay, we lost that call. So I think when we're talking about unsustainability of the Bahamian male trauma, the Bahamian male rage, the Bahamian male resentment, it's a real thing. And your environment does not define you. You may have been born into poverty, and you may live the daily struggle of poverty, but the poverty does not define your destiny. In fact, it can cause you to have greater character, greater resilience. You can use that as a motivation for great things. You see your mother struggling. Do great things to give your mother a better life. Do great things to have a better life for your children than what you're experiencing at this moment. So let hardship build character. Self-determination, impeccable work ethic, to rise above your difficult circumstances. There's nothing that cannot be overcome. And if you have somebody that can help you, guide you through the darkness, always seek help. There's a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Hey, good evening. Good evening. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
All right, very well, very well. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you two gentlemen and the host for a dynamic conversation. I was literally in a training session with a student of mine. I teach locksmen from A1 Lock and Key, and I started to hear the conversation, and I just had it in the background as I was teaching, and I was like, wow, just hearing the message that you were giving, I was like, wow, this resonated with me 100%. I happen to be a men's development coach, so I help men get fit, make money, and find love. And, you know, with the ongoing problems we're seeing in society where young men are finding challenge to be able to integrate society in a positive way, I feel like I need to connect with you two individuals, and maybe we can produce a solution in order to be able to implement for young men. Like, I feel like we need a national men's development program that where the government funds this so that men could gain a basic discipline of self-knowledge, self-understanding, spirituality, and development in physicality. But I know you were going to say something. You could go ahead, sir.
Well, I think your words are wonderful. They're very inspiring, and we both feel the same.
I think I like that idea. The only thing about that idea that I don't like is, let's not look to the government to fund that. Let's do it ourselves. I mean, if it's so important for us to, as men, to recognize that men development is going to change our community. We need to put our own personal investment in that. I think our reliance on government is too much. I think as independent, honestly, I think as independent citizens, we need to do it. We can't. The government is not going to do everything, and we shouldn't even look to them to do anything. I think we recognize that we have a problem in our society. The previous caller said everybody, you know, he lists all kind of different agencies and say how people are corrupt, right? Why not we who because we're motivated by change. You know, I heard a statement the other day is if you choose what you don't change, if you don't change something, you choose it. And if you want to do this, and I'm with you there, this male development, men development, but let us put our money where our mouth is, right? And we can raise that funds or those funds to then do that. Don't depend on the government. Forget the government, if you ask me. Let us do it. Let us as citizens do it. I mean, we don't need government taxpayers for it. The reliance on government is too much. I think we need to we need to stop having that thought. We have to be reliant on government to make changes for us. We are independent citizens. We can come together and have a corporate community that we want to see change, and we choose that change.
Okay, sounds good. What would something look like if you were to develop something like that? What would be the starting basis, and then how you would see it, like if you were to make it actionable?
It starts with a conversation, and we're having that conversation now. And I like the fact you say you're a locksmith, so I mean, you're teaching young men how to provide a service. Okay, listen, I lock myself out of my car plenty times, and I need a good locksmith. Or I can't open a door, and I need a good locksmith, just like I need a good plumber, just like I need a good electrician. All of these things we need. These are service industry. I am in a service industry. I am a surgeon, but I'm in a service industry. I am serving people. There's a demand for my service. There's a demand for your service. That's how the economy runs. It's exchange of goods and services. And so if we can now empower all of our young men, give them the tools that they need for them to provide a service to those who demand that service, then they will be able to feed themselves and their family. And then deviate or move away from a life of crime. Because crime is part of the economy too. Right? And we got to recognize that. So if we diversify our economy, if we empower people more, right? Stop relying on government. Okay, and let's do our own thing. Then we'll see how we get there. So this is the conversation. You need to get we need to get your number, and so that we sit and see how we can then work on empowering men to change our own community.
That sounds good. Just let me know how I can get that to you, and then we can go from there.
Well, I think you can just leave it with the producer and we'll get back to you. But I always say that we can reach out, if we can reach out to young boys early and change their internal world to a positive one, then their external world will be shaped by them instead of having their external world shaping them. So let's prevent a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old going down the path where they're going to be an armed robber at 18 or 17, or they're going to be breaking into houses, or they're going to be delinquent and smoking weed and not going to school and being aimless. Let's prevent that from early. Why are we waiting until it's too late? Why are we being reactionary? Let's be proactive. Let's instill positive values. Let's build dreams in 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds. Let's stress the importance of academics for them so that they know that academics can take them to great heights. And
I agree.
And it only starts, as they say, with a conversation. Okay, appreciate your call, and I think it was a very positive one. We haven't given up on our country. We love our country. We're here after long days. Police officers have long days. Defense Force officers have long days. Surgeons certainly have long days, but we're here. We haven't given up hope on our country. We haven't given hope on our future as a nation, and I know that we can change the tide of times.
Yeah, and I just want to say, and I want to encourage the police officers out there, because I know they're probably taking a hit right now, but there's some good police officers out there who go to work every day and provide the service for the community.
Oh, they're unsung heroes. They're absolutely unsung heroes, and they're taking a beating now, and it's unfair.
Yeah,
you need to look at the entire police officer branch as a whole, and for the most part, they're lifesavers, and they're angels in disguise.
Absolutely.
So I'm sorry they're going through this, and I personally will say that I know many of them who are above reproach and are God-fearing and are doing great things for our country and keeping our society together.
We can't do without them.
Cannot do without them. They're vital to the future of our country. We'll talk further on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks with Bayham urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and Bayham surgical oncologist Dr. Wesley Francis.
Freeport, don't buy that ticket yet. The biggest Black Friday event is about to come your way. November 28th, 29th, and 30th. Mark your calendars. Bahamas Liquidation and Auction Center is bringing our 3 days of blackout right to your doorstep. Thousands of items from Amazon, Home Depot, and Walmart, all at their U.S. online listed prices, freight and duty paid. It's a shopping spree like you've never seen before. Don't believe us? Bring your phone and Google it. Join us at the large warehouse on West Settlers Way. Don't miss out. Be there or be square.
Beulah gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on?
See something? Say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Dr. Gregory Pinto and Dr. Wesley Francis. We're speaking now. The topic is essentially we're trying to save a lost generation of young men. We're trying to empower men to want more for themselves, to do better, and then just to try to save a nation as a whole. So I agree with you. You can't blame the government for everything. You can't look for the government for everything. I mean, violence breeds violence. Disrespect breeds disrespect. If you're beating your wife, and that's all your son knows, what do you expect from him? If he's living in a violent environment where he sees drug deals going down, where he sees unscrupulous persons coming in and out of all hours of the night, how are we going to save him? You can't blame the government for him picking up a gun because that's all he knows. You can't blame the government for him stabbing or beating his girlfriend because violence is all he's ever seen, and that's the only way he knows how to interact with a female. We also have to blame the parents. The parents are ultimately responsible. You can also blame the church. We are, as a nation, we obviously we all have a role, but I think that the parents are the primary issue when it comes to many of these kids going awry. You don't know where your child is, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. You see him coming home with what you must know are stolen goods, and you never say a thing. You see him hiding that gun in the backyard, and you don't say a thing, or you don't approach him or confront him. Where are we going to be with society if you know what's going on and you don't want to do anything about it? And all they're going to do is cause further destruction, death and destruction of your family and our society as a whole. So we got to do better. We got to do better as a nation, blaming the police, blaming the defense force, blaming the government. We got to blame ourselves. What are we doing other than just complaining about what's going on? Are we reaching out to those around us and making sure that they don't go down a path that leads them to the Boys Industrial School, or leads them to a life of despair, or leads them to a path of hopelessness, or ending up in Fox Hill prison, or a life of being on ankle bracelet, or being in bail all the time and in and out of court. Do you really want to have your child very well known to the police? I mean, why is this such a common occurrence? Things have to change, and it's a complex issue. It's multifactorial, but we just can't give up hope.
I think it starts with accountability. I think that's the word that should be the word of the day. And accountability starts with us. We have to be accountable to our community. If we don't change our own environment, then the entire community doesn't change. It's going to take with that first. And everything that you're saying, we got to be accountable. Again, if you know crime is happening and you say nothing or you do nothing, or if you encourage, and the thing about it, if you don't change bad behavior or change incentives for behavior, then you choose that behavior. And that's what we do. Are we closing our eyes to certain things? Are we turning away and allowing things? When we do that, we choose it. And we're complicit. And so before we start pointing fingers, maybe we all should start looking in the mirror, right? Before we start talking about corruption, let's see what things that we've allowed and see and do nothing about, and that leads and blossoms into this larger problem. It always starts small. Everything starts small, and then it mushrooms into things, right? It doesn't always start as this large problem. The problem started with one first inciting event, and then it then grew from there.
I mean, if we look at the history, I think psychiatrist Dr. Michael Neville actually look at the history of these men who were incarcerated for heinous crimes. What was their childhood like? What was their upbringing like? What issues did they have as they grew up? There was a problem even from then. It wasn't as if it was a surprise that they ended up shooting somebody. It wasn't a surprise that they had an armed robbery or they ended up murdering somebody or raping somebody. Even from their youth, you can see that there was an anger issue. There was a problem with addressing their emotions. Too many men in the society are told to bottle up their emotions and not show any vulnerability, not to show any weakness. Many of them have post-traumatic stress that there's no outlet to deal with, and all of that, the outlet essentially becomes violence. And as they say, violence breeds violence, and all we're going to do is destroy our nation in the process. So we need to be able to have an open conversation about the mental, emotional, and psychological health of young men, middle-aged men, elderly men of all ages. And we need to encourage our family members if there's something they're going through. I mean, there are studies that have looked at what percentage of men in Fox Hill Prison were victims of violence within the home. Probably 90-something percent. So if we can stop that, if we can stop the violence within the home, we can change the environment, we can change the mindset, we can save our nation. But if we're going to take a blind eye and know that your next-door neighbor, the wife is being beaten senseless every other day, that there's molestation going down within the church and everything else, we need to be vocal and we need to stop it. And we can't just give up. I mean, it's easy to say, you know what, let's just give up, particularly for those who have the ability and have... we, as surgeons, we didn't have to come home. We could have gone to a first world nation where I remember going and living in Hamburg, Germany, where you can freely walk 3 o'clock in the morning through a public park and you have no qualms or concerns about ever being robbed because it's almost unheard of. Oh, my professor of urology in Hamburg, Germany, had 33 years of experience. He never once saw a gunshot. Never once. He saw a stab wound to kidney once, and that was it. Because it's not a violent society. Violence is extremely rare. Here, if we look at the resources, the toll on our medical care system, just in terms of blood products, in terms of surgical time, in terms of ICU beds, in terms of the toll it takes on the emergency room physicians and nurses, who I applaud because I couldn't do it. And they do it day in and day out. They patch up somebody, and these are people, even when we were younger surgeons, they would say, you know what, I'm going back on the road and I'm going to get this guy. And then you see that he would come back shot again or someone else, and it just continues and continues and it never stops. When are we going to put an end to this? When are we going to put an end to this? We as the hospital is on its knees because of violence, because of gunshots, because of car accidents, because of trauma. How are we going to have the resources, the manpower, the beds, the surgical time to deal with cancers?
Yeah, it's a real thing, you know. I remember when I was head of surgery, the orthopedic guys always complained. They could not do anything other than trauma. All they were doing was trauma because they didn't have they did not have the time to be able to fix other things. You know, people who had deformities, people who had tumors, all of that. There were countless numbers of times when, you know, we had to cancel lists for people with cancer because there was no blood available. There was no time available. Why? Because all the resources were being put into trauma. So this is the effect that this have on a wider community. People don't realize it, but it does. Every day it affects you. And we, again, I said, we have to be able to do something about it. We as a community.
I mean, it was common, and it still is common, unfortunately, that I can remember earlier in the year, I had a list of five patients. I had to cancel all of them because my operating theater, the anesthetist I was using for my elective list, had to deal with a six-year-old shot in the head with a stray bullet in a drive-by. So these are the reality. So there were patients who had cancer. There were patients who were suffering with a very poor quality of life because of kidney stones that we had to cancel. And then the issue is with PMH is it's so overwhelmed. Where do we postpone these patients to? Because we just kick the ball down the road. You postpone somebody else, and then you got to postpone somebody else. And by the time someone gets operated on, due to circumstances beyond our control, obviously as surgeons, and that's one of the more frustrating things, they always blame us because we're the face of the patient C, but it's beyond our control. The average person may have been canceled 2-3 times before they actually get their surgery done. And it's very frustrating for them. It's very frustrating for us, and it's not getting any better. Over the years, it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think of resources are resources. And if they're used up more by one thing, then you can't apply those same resources to something else. I mean, that's as basic as you get it. So if trauma overwhelms the system, overwhelms the emergency room, overwhelms the operating room time, overwhelms the blood bank, overwhelms everybody in the system, then those same resources are needed for elective cases. And if they're being used up, they can't, you know, the whole system breaks down and people are not serviced. And so this is the price or the outcome of crime. And you know, people don't always see it. And I think we're going to use this platform to maybe open it up a little bit. Let them see what we go through. Let them see what really is the price of crime. Really what happens to other people when all of those resources are dedicated to taking care of, again, and there are people, and we have to take care of them. We can't stop. We can't say, oh, they're criminals, they're shooting each other, let them. No, we cannot do that. We have to take care of them. And it's a finite resource. And so if those resources are used up there, then other people don't get the opportunity.
And I'll give examples that I've seen over many, many years where persons are shot, we save them, they have a spinal cord injury, a transection of their spine, they're paraplegic, they're quadriplegic. These are people who are going to come into the hospital with infected bed sores, decubitus ulcers, bladder infections, kidney stones, this and that, a deep vein thrombosis. And they'll be in hospital for months on end. They'll take endless resources. Yeah, it gets I remember there was a patient who was a paraplegic and stayed home with an infected suprapubic catheter, and it developed basically flesh-eating bacteria, necrotizing fasciitis, where we had to operate on him so many, too many times to count. By the time we had operated on him more, maybe 15 times, used so many resources, used the ICU bed, every measure, maybe 20 units of blood, he succumbed as not even a 30-year-old. And I remember administrators estimated it cost the Bahamian government, the public hospital, over $700,000 just for that one individual. Imagine if he didn't go down that road, if he hadn't joined a gang, if he hadn't hung out with the wrong people, if he hadn't gotten shot. And what could we have used with those resources? We could have changed his life or others' lives. We can use that to improve the schools, to have after school programs, to give scholarships to police officers' kids. But we're using resources to basically patch up people who are just going to go back and bring more trauma and drain more resources from society. And yes, as you said, what are we going to do? We have to patch up whoever it is, whether it's a police officer shot or it's a known man who's shot four people. So it's a sad state of affairs, but you and I haven't given up hope, and I know there are a lot of young men, women, members of the government, the church, civic organizations who haven't given up, and I think that we need to band together and try and save our society. What are your final words, Dr. Francis?
Listen, I just want to encourage the policemen out there, because they keep our community safe. Yes, there's some elements that are not wholesome, but they keep our community safe. They keep law and order. And I want to encourage every policeman out there or policewoman out there to continue to do your job and do it to the best of your ability.
I agree, and I'll emphasize that I think they're unsung heroes, and for the most part, they are the angels of our society. And thank you to the police. Thank you to the Defense Force. Thank you to the immigration officers. Thank you to the customs officers. Thank you to the prison officers. We all need our uniform branches, and we don't say enough positive things about them. So thank you very much for joining us on The Urologist Speaks. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, and thank you again to my co-host, Dr. Wesley Francis. And Bahamas, have a good night.
Good night, Bahamas.
Don't be ashamed. It's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
You will find
he'll help you solve your problems
on 96.9. Yeah.
I'm telling you, with early detection
comes early prevention.
Put lead in your pen.